Oh.
Excuse me.
If I can have your attention, please. The May Disabilities Advisory Board meeting is starting, and we have some of our members are quickly walking down the hallway to fame and fortune.
Now, on that note, I'm passing around Darrell's wedding announcement.
Oh, wow.
So that you all can see it.
Wow.
Thank you. Congratulations. So, as we do always, we're going to start with community input. So, if you would please, just raise your hand and grab my attention, and I'd be happy to have you share your concerns, thoughts, ideas, praise. Nothing negative, please. Does anybody want to share anything? Going once? Going twice? Sold American. Okay. Our first order of business is Community Services Strategic Plan Update with Vanessa.
So I just wanted to come back to give you guys an update on our department strategic plan. You are, I think, the fourth advisory board that I've come and talked to. So I just wanted to share and let you know where we're at. This is the evolving process. I'll be back next year as we update it. So, excuse me. So one of the things that we focused on, and this is our five-year plan, and this is for the entire department, all of our programs. So one of the things is all of our programs, as well as our federal and state funders, we are moving more towards outcomes, so moving away from outputs to more outcomes. So we're going to be more outcome-focused, working with our providers. We are looking at how do we collect and look at our data to help us make our decisions. We are also embarking on some new work, and I want to say that Mary and Trish and myself are a part of this, is looking at an equity lens to make sure that we're serving all the populations in our community and to making sure that we're including all those voices as we look at all of our services, looking internally and externally. We also are continue to develop key strategic partnerships, particularly in the areas of housing, working with the homeless populations, continuing with intellectual disabilities, aid for home. We're also assisting providers to participate in a more coordinated integrated system. So no one provider can do it all, so we're actually kind of asking systems to kind of look across and figure it out to be a better partner. You've seen our mission, vision, and value statements. This is something that this process was completely staff-led. Ryan Treglone was our lead for our staff. He's one of our financial analysts. And we worked with a series of staff. All staff had some input into this, and they actually came out and talked to the provider network as well as the advisory board to get some input. But these are our updated mission, vision, and values that the staff completely stood behind. So this is what we're using, and this is kind of updated from our last strategic plan. The staff really kind of wanted to focus on four main theme areas that all of our programs somehow see themselves into. So whether it's housing stability or well-being, economic advancement, or connected and resilient community, all programs to include intellectual disabilities fit somewhere up underneath those categories. Next slide. And again, as I mentioned before, Ryan Treglone, this was a staff-led process from beginning to end. I think it was 2 years long that we worked on this, that we just finalized last July, I believe. So it is a living document for us, and these are all the advisory boards that we went in front of and providers to get some input into kind of what are we doing with our strategic plan. So, and we will continue to reach out to these groups and get some continued feedback as we update. Again, we finalized it in July. We also updated our visual images to be more aligned to the county. The county has changed their logo. They also have some visual standards. So we've also aligned it to make sure we are connected to what the county's changes are as well. So the next steps is we are working with some consultants to help us look at data collection for all of our programs. Intellectual disabilities collects quite a bit of data already, but some of our programs do not, so we need to work with them to actually create a data system. We're going to look at how do we take all those data systems and come look at how can we combine them and look at a bigger, broader picture of what's going on in our department and not so much by programs. So we've got a ways to go with that, but so that will probably take us about a year or so to get there, but that's part of our goal. Is so when people ask about community services, I can tell them a more holistic picture about what we do in our department. because we do a variety of diverse programs here. Again, outcome focus, we want to be able to tell, put in our contracts and work with our providers, but we want to be able to tell the community, you know, how has taxpayers' dollars been spent? What are the outcomes? How have we changed people's lives? Not so much to how many people we serve, but also how we have improved people's lives. So our goal is to also focus in that direction too. Again, we are also working with our staff, or develop our staff over our gross pressures resource, as well as our provider networks, but also continuing to work with them to increase their focus and training around equity and diversity across our programs. Again, we just embarked on that program. We just started last month, I believe, and we're now kind of in the thrust of it. We'll be a two-year kind of effort with us working with the Center for Equity and Inclusion, which is also working with the City of Vancouver, the Community Foundation of Southwest Washington, and a number of community organizations in Clark County. Again, we're trying to do some more outreach and engagement to make sure that we are reaching out and hearing from different diverse voices, providers, consumers, across a variety of perspectives. Again, we are also looking at how do we transition. So the county has moved away from priority-based budgeting to kind of more program-focused budgeting. So that's going to be new for us. So we're in the process of doing that. So we won't be doing baseline budgeting anymore. We're going to be looking at program focuses, and so councilors can get a sense of what they're funding. So we're in the middle of also learning that new process as we also move into the new financial system as well. And then again, I've mentioned before, our equity training and development, which will be an equity work plan that will be connected to this. And it's not going to be a special kind of like a diversity plan. Equity is going to be how we think, just like we think about lean principles. It is going to be ingrained in how we do our business. So that was kind of our update. I just wanted to give you, hopefully next year we can come back and talk to you about some of the successes and some of the outcomes that some of the programs, some of our programs are well ahead with their outcomes, such as development of the story. But some areas we got to move on, help our providers get there. We want to be able to get those reports out to the community. And if you haven't seen it, this is our strategic plan. So if anybody can have a copy, I'm going to get you a copy. But I'm very pleased with it because it is staff-led. And this is a living document for us. So as we update it, this document will update as well. So we wanted to let you know this is kind of leading us in our work in the next 5 years.
So this may help with your research as far as the data collection and the trends that we're seeing right now through the programs. Mm-hmm. That
those are tracking year over year, the ones from the DD plan.
Yes.
And hopefully you'll be able to pull them into whatever.
Yes, that's
thing.
The goal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal, is to take whatever successes we have to be able to show it, but put it in a more larger report.
Right.
System.
Yeah.
Any
questions
for me?
Do any of the board members have a question? Does anybody in the public have a question?
Oh, come on. I would say kudos. And
yes.
The equity part, I think, too, that's something that we're finally addressing more widely and more deeply. And mm-hmm. More, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I didn't like to bring up right now, but the difference in the budgeting, how the program budgeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so baseline budgeting, basically what we've done probably since the beginning of the county has been created, is basically every department would get kind of a baseline budget to whatever your department services are. No one really scrutinized what are you doing with those dollars or what are the programs. Now we actually have to take all of our program, all those dollars, and put them into programs. And you have to explain what that program does, what is the outcome for that program, what kind of staff are with that program. And then you write it up, and then when the board looks at it, they're actually, instead of looking at your department in a budget, they're looking at programs. And so they're kind of focused on, so for us, like if we have our homeless programs, we have to explain what, we can't just say homeless and community services, we have to say shelters, we have to say rental assistance, we have to explain it that way.
How are any new initiatives introduced to the counselors as far as that whole process? Program specific budgeting?
I would say that will be done during the biennial budget process. They are looking at should they move to annual budgeting process, which will be a decision made probably in the next 90 days. But what happens is it's an opportunity that time, whether there's a RFP that comes out or if a department wants to do something, a new initiative, mm-hmm. you would submit it through that process. Now, given the fact that county general funds are really tight right now, chances of getting new programs funded, unless it's a priority for the board, are going to be slim. But we are, like for instance, our local mental health sales tax, the 110-116 sales tax, we're going to be putting an RFP out for that. And so that's an opportunity for new programs to get started that way. So I think that's what they're trying to figure out, is taking an opportunity of leveraging different dollars to be able to be innovative, but at the same time trying to be responsible for what the taxpayer dollars.
Any other questions?
Thank you for
coming. Thank you. Faith? We have an update from the piece.
Everyone. I think Mary's passing out some reports. So we have finished a phase one report for the county around housing needs for people with disabilities here in Clark County. And the phase one report is a content analysis. So the first section of the report is sort of a high-level overview of what is the research that's been done around housing needs in the county, and what are some of the problems that intersect with housing and the needs of people with disabilities. So it's a long report, so I trust that you will all take time to read it in completion. But I want to highlight some of the main findings and then let you know what we're doing in terms of next steps. So the report is not a finished piece. There's obvious next steps, and the next steps are research that PEACE is conducting. And we're doing that research. So the initial proposal was to do an assessment, and that's a really broad word. So this report is the kind of introduction and the groundwork for what the assessment is. And what we're doing for the assessment is qualitative interviews with parents, people with disabilities, and providers around the barriers that they've experienced in finding sustainable housing for people with disabilities. So why would we choose, do people know what qualitative research is? It's a conversation instead of, you can imagine a survey where you have 5 responses and then you rate a Likert scale to say yes, very likely, or no, very likely. And the reason why we've chosen to do qualitative research is because if you can imagine, if I ask you, what is your experience or what are the barriers you've experienced, if I did a survey, I would have to choose the barriers for you to then select from. So qualitative analysis gives us the opportunity to create an open-ended question of what are the barriers without, as a researcher, positing what I think your barriers are. So we've conducted 3 focus groups currently, and we're currently recruiting more family members and people in the community to participate in our focus groups. So if you're interested, I would love to get in touch with you about participating. And some of the questions that we're talking about are the needs that your family member has, the needs in the community, the barriers you've personally experienced, and some of your ideas about next steps or how to move forward.
Are you also asking about what's working? So if there's something that's working, we can build on that?
Yeah, we do cover some of the things that are going well in people's lives, so for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So after those, after that data is completed, so data collection will be done at the end of May, we're providing another report to the county around what our findings are about the main barriers that people have identified and some next steps to what we can do to address some of those barriers. So that is a lot of reading that I just went through in a few minutes, and I'd be happy to answer questions and, yeah, discuss.
That is a lot of reading, and many people won't read it.
Yeah.
So, you know what, when I assign papers like this, you have an abstract in front, or a first, you know, kind of a first page where you summarize a couple things, the main points. Then people can look at that, and some papers don't fit that way. And I was thinking maybe it'd be hard to do, like, but if you can find a way to give a one-page summary,
sure,
or two-page summary,
I'd be happy to
first
do that.
People will read it, more likely will read it.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
This was just the first, when we did a contract, we did phases,
yeah,
and this was step one. And before they could go on to step two, we had to cover step one. So,
oh, very good. I should have started by saying good job. But.
I would assume there'll be, at the completion, there will be some kind of executive summary. So we won't, you won't have to have the entire one, but you'll be able to maybe go to where you're.
Yes, I'm happy to provide a more succinct description, summary, one page handout with pictures, I think that's helpful.
You can put this in the text, but don't put it in the front page.
Yeah. But yes, I know 35 pages is a lot.
Do you need more families?
Yes, we currently need families.
So Chris, can you help with that?
Yes, and we'll be doing focus groups with case managers and providers as well. So I'm interested in hearing if any of you work with like respite providers or if you have personal care attendants. I'd love to talk to them if they want to participate.
How are you determining the sample size as far as different demographics, like care providers versus parents versus clients?
That's a really good question. So sampling and qualitative methodology looks a little different in that, so if the way that we generally talk about sampling is you want to be representative of a community. So if you have 20,000 people, you can predict a sample of around 900 people and stratify for race and stratify for gender and stratify for all sorts of things. With qualitative methodology, sampling is based on saturation, which means I'm going to interview you two, and the five topics that you bring up, I'm going to note those topics. And then I'm going to interview you two, and you may talk about three of those topics and five new ones. Saturation happens when the main themes that I've identified are brought up over and over and over by all sorts of different populace. So that is a less precise way to say I can't answer that it's going to be 30 single moms and 30 single dads and 30 providers, and maybe I talk to three single moms and three single dads and 16 providers, and that's when I reach saturation. I will say after doing three focus groups with families, as you can predict, a lot of the needs that they've identified, I'm pretty close to saturation. They're saying the same things kind of over and over again.
So needs instead of target groups.
Yes. And then, you know, a possible next step is because, so this is the limitation of qualitative research, is it's not representative. So I can't say we sampled perfectly to represent the African American community and the Asian community and these are what we found. But what I can say is these are the needs that we've identified. A possible next step, if what is important is representation, is to produce a survey based on our findings. So we've highlighted these five needs and we then sample to make sure that we're representative. So, I hope that.
Yeah, it gives me an idea of how you're approaching it. Anyone else have any questions? Does anybody in the audience have questions?
Yeah. Are you interviewing residential providers, people who are in supported living?
Yes. So if you have providers to connect me to, that would be great.
Well, that's for infrastructure housing rather than supports, right?
Yeah. Both, yes.
Okay. And then the other question is, how about property managers, people or landlords who actually own residents?
That would be great. That would be great. Yeah, I'm open to that. Yeah. We're also interviewing people with disabilities and have done a significant amount of research on the best way to provide accommodations so that they can participate in the research and in a meaningful way and not just a tokenized way. So we are definitely interested in connecting to people with disabilities if you would have connections for us to interview them.
I would add to what Monica said is even go to the development community, you know, where a lot of new initiatives, if they're cognizant, may sample, you know, different ways to approach housing or how to look at universal design.
Sure. I think one of the things that's been interesting to find, especially in your community, so I'm not from Clark County, I live in Portland, but connecting with the stories through focus groups, what we've been finding that's the most meaningful is that you guys are so well-informed and organized and interested in this fight that often I'm asking about needs and people want to jump to answers, you know? So you've already been talking about the needs for so long and it's just my job to kind of get them down on paper. And you guys are all ready to say, okay, well, we have this idea, we have this idea, we have this idea. So it's been a challenge, a good challenge, to say, okay, I love that idea, but how can we talk about some of the needs so that we create sort of the concrete flooring so that we can eventually talk about what's going to happen.
So you're saying you're resaturation with ideas, is that true?
I am definitely resaturation with ideas, but you guys have a lot of good ones.
Please make sure that public transportation is one of those pieces of the concrete.
I would love for you to participate in a focus group so that I can
I would
that
be happy to do that. No, I don't carry cards. That's so 20th.
Yeah, so if you have a burning desire to participate in a focus group yourself, I would love to have you. All of the needs that you want to tell me, I will be recording and writing down and putting in another report for you to read, so I'd be excited for your participation.
Okay, do you have a card?
I do.
I'll send, if you have enough cards, give them cards. Otherwise, I can also
find you. I mean, I know. It's easy to...
That's true. So.
That housing group that used to meet, that no longer has a leader.
Well, that just happened today.
Yeah. Is that going to be taken in by your group then?
I think that's a great question for Darla. I know that they're in conversation about whatever that can look like.
Whatever data they have, or whatever people, those resources.
Home today, the ARC, let the person go. Her last day will be May 15th.
And you'll see, actually, in the report we did, I wrote about Home, the Home project, because they did provide a lot of resources for some of the underpinning of the research.
Okay, well, in here, it's at
the position.
This one.
Okay.
They said Juanita was going to continue the meetings, but she has a lot on her plate, so I don't know. Well, they have poor Juanita.
That's what Teresa said on her.
Yeah. I saw that just before I came in here.
Are there any other questions? Great. I will get in touch with all of you. Yeah. And you can say, no, I'm not interested.
Yes. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
You all have different perspectives.
Yeah, thank you, Faith.
Yes.
Thanks, Faith.
Mary D.
Yes.
The transition conference. Could you please share that?
I went up with Trish to a transition conference in Tacoma, and I felt really good about what Clark County is doing, because we're in a more metropolitan area. We were in a group with people from Lewis County, and if you're living in Centralia Chehalis, which is out, you can add names from down here, if things are going fairly well, but in the extended areas of the county, either at the ocean or at the beach and up by Randall and things, it's a little bit more challenging to get people engaged in jobs. But we were working on a group, and we're working on. Trish, help me out, because you're in that group.
We're going to meet again. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, we're going to meet again and then ferret out more of what transition looks like and how it's going in all the different districts, really.
Mm-hmm. And do you want me to add this piece about the... So transition was kind of part of some planning that counties and providers and others did as a forum back in September of 2017. So this transition piece, we kind of want to figure out how to dovetail what we've learned from the people from Clark County that went to this transition conference and kind of put that together with the work that we're doing around the planning for employment that was done at the Alderbrook conference in September.
I'm a bit confused. Does every community, every county have its own program and kind of run as silos? And once in a while you conference together? Or do they have some kind of state to... No, it's all silos. Huh?
Well, it's really school district driven. And then different counties have relationships with... Like, we have relationships with most all of our school districts. Some counties may not. The Seattle Public Schools is bigger than a bread box. I mean, it's huge. So they might have relationships between the county and certain schools, and they may never talk to other schools because it's such a geographical challenge.
How is our silo?
How are their silos?
How does it rate?
The Vancouver, the Evergreen, and the Camas.
Yeah. Yeah. Vancouver, Evergreen, and Camas are pretty involved.
What about Battleground?
Battleground is kind of slid away from us. They've had some levies go down and some staff changes, and we need to go and engage with them. Mm-hmm. Chris has provided us one of the things that happened in the last 5 years is that the ESD used to run special ed programs for the smaller districts.
Hawkinson.
And Hawkinson and Ridgefield and La Center and
some on the coast.
Yeah. Well, the only things that they have left are the coast and out the gorge. And these districts, smaller districts, have taken on their own programs, which is actually very healthy because the teachers belong to the district then, and the kids belong to the district, and in the long run it will be better for everybody. But there's some, you know, you all wrote a letter to Hawkinson not too long ago, and because there was an issue, and so now we're going to meet with Ridgefield, who their families have been coming to the training series, but the district itself has been kind of disengaged. So
a little off the subject, whatever happened with that letter we wrote, did they respond?
Yes, they did, and they fixed up whatever it was, and they didn't want any more letters.
Well, this is your there
you go. But they did respond. They did respond very nicely.
I wrote the pen.
Was that on when I said that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anything more, Mary G., about
more to come. Yeah, there is. It was kind of like work in progress, really. You know, apparently they'd done some work and then came together again. And they kind of grouped us according to counties, and we worked with some. From a teaching standpoint, you know, I think I've seen so much growth here because we're engaged. And again, you know, it's the outlying areas that have a more challenging time, which could be, you know, here too.
Did you have any aha moments, like a really cool, like, that would be a great thing to try, or that's something I hadn't thought of before, for a traditional community? There's usually one for something.
It was kind of more of a work group.
They designed it to be working.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if people got to, you ask Adrian, because he went also.
The county allowed pay for myself and the co-workers to go. I really enjoyed the opportunity for sessions. And it was nice for us to share in one of our work groups about the transition series that happens October to May now. We also shared about the new meet and greet that we're doing in May. So I think people gathered and collected some of the comments that we made, and we collected comments that we made.
So Clark County was the
only one. Right.
Tell them more about the thing. So, as you know, the last regular series was last Wednesday, Tuesday, or Wednesday night, Value of Employment, and this year, Trish and DDA, Calumet County DDA, and the employment vendors are working together and hosting a meet and greet on May 23rd at the Vancouver Library. And we're inviting all the transition students and their families and the schools to come and meet the vendors and have a picture of who they might want to interview as they graduate in June, as they leave the school system in June.
Good idea.
So come. May 23rd, 4:30, 6:30 at the library.
And you'll get closer.
So Linda, somebody asked about AHAs. And one of the things that I kind of thought, I thought this was kind of interesting, and
maybe others might not think it was kind of as much of an aha, but here it is. They were talking about, in another county, they make sure that they do person-centered planning for every transition student that comes out of school. Now, in the past, we've talked about person-centered planning here and thought, well, you know, we never really want to say, like, everybody needs a person-centered plan, because not everybody needs a person-centered plan, but transition is such a time of change and transition, right, that is a big change from school to adulthood and lots of different things. And I know that we've done work with our school districts to get teachers trained in doing person-centered plans. So I know that some of our students are graduating already having person-centered plans, but I don't think that we get everybody. So I think that maybe doing something, that was kind of an aha for me to think about, should we figure out a way to figure out, like, who's had a person-centered plan, and then for the people that haven't, if they didn't get one at the end of school, to get one at the beginning of component services.
We probably need to talk to the special ed directors too, because the teachers on, you know, the teachers that are trained need support. Mm-hmm. And the A team, we call them these trainer teachers, the A team, they need support. I think you're one of those, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. There's maybe some demand to do it again next summer.
Yeah. Well, and at one point in time, I know Evergreen, when they were participating in the training that was going on during the school year, their administrator kind of deemed that all students shall have.
But I don't think they followed through, did they?
Well, they did start this year. So I remember one guy was really good at facilitating, and the other teacher, her thing was the quantum confinement. So he was a good facilitator. He moved on, though, so I'm not sure where he went. And then in Camas, I don't know if you guys know this yet, but we'll be getting a new special ed director.
I didn't hear.
Our current special ed director is leaving, that's what I know now. And so what that's going to look like, they did a kind of a focus meeting and asked questions about what people think the district needs. As Camas is growing, like, majorly. So part of what Camas needs is somebody that can take the small system and help it get big.
It's getting big out there.
It is big.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Monica?
I was kind of wondering, with person-centered planning, did they ever do that for the parents? I'm serious about it, because one of the things that I've noticed in my exposure to planning out is the support network that can sabotage, you know, the best laid plans, because mom and dad or the sister and brother are extremely overprotective, or they're assuming limitations on their child that isn't part of reality. So I'm kind of wondering, the same way as we, you know, try to give skills and a sense of optimism and confidence to the students, whether or not that's something that we should also be doing to the parents.
Well, the parents always need to be a part of
the
process. Yeah. There's no way that we can kind of move a person forward without moving their support network, or without moving with their support network.
Mona has been talking to you about people not dreaming, so I've been spending some time with the kids in kids who are 3 to 5 years old, right? Little out of my comfort zone, but the parents are there, so it's working.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm actually doing a training in another county, and it is really specifically around that, and remote vehicle state and crisis center plan, and then doing community asset mapping, mm-hmm. and then how can you engage in the different people. And it engages a community, which is just another kind of layer to, you know, finding out, like, it's just another template, because I do a lot of person-centered plans. It's a path plan that goes then to what are our next steps, and then it is really, it's the goal, but then we get into action steps, and then how are we going to check in and facilitate that, and that includes, you know, parent support, you're reaching out to other parents. Mm-hmm. So it is a
it's a, another step to it that I think is, would be a beneficial.
That's great, Monica. Next steps and practical steps as next steps rather than here's the plan. Exactly. And then parents are going, okay, who's doing what next? How do I even begin to do whatever exactly. the next step is?
Yes.
Which is great to have those tools and practical things. But I think we really have to go back to that whole idea of dreaming and having parents dream
yes.
bigger
mm-hmm.
And get that information from the wee ones in 0-3 and beyond. I mean, a regular, consistent message to dream big, to hope and dream big.
Well, and take you on the road.
Yeah,
I can sense
to win the lottery. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I would travel and
yeah.
talk about that. I have the blessing of seeing Kathy Snow, Disability is Natural, at the All Born In conference when, and probably before that, I watched her at the Swindells, at a Swindells Center event when my son was a toddler, and it changed everything. It changed everything. I found her materials in this file drawer like a year ago. I was like purging through my home file cabinet, and I just sat and cried in the room because I can remember her saying, you know, don't over-therapize your kids, don't make them think they're broken. And so she was pretty radical at the time. Quit physical therapy and enroll that child in sports or gymnastics. So it was like, I'll listen to her. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, as much as possible, you know, get things out of going to medical buildings and get supports and different lessons and in natural environments.
And that is one of the things that doing facilitating your person's care plan that I like when I'm asking, well, where do you think they could go or view? And people say, well, they are ants. Or as I said, I just want you to think maybe a little bit different about how can you engage a person in their community, their local community. So a facilitator needs to have that skill as well to do that training or maybe you know, providing a little bit of different perspective than because everybody's mindset is service.
Well, at least by the time you get to adults.
Well, yeah, that's what I was saying.
I mean, if you begin to reframe the whole messaging from birth on around dreaming and not limiting and through each stage, 0-3 to 3-5, in the elementary school, in the middle school, as you start person-centered planning, transition planning in middle school and high school, so that by the time they get to the adult, drop off the cliff at age 21, age out, it's not a foreign thought. They've already done it.
Yes.
They've already done some of the things like Ben has done, where he's gone to the same restaurant every week for 9 years since it opened, so everyone knows him. That's his Cheers bar.
Cheers.
And that he walks in and everyone knows him. I mean, those are very simple things, but if parents don't know, if you don't share that, if people this far down the road don't share that stuff with people who are not as far along the journey, then they won't know. And I think systematically the best way you can impact that change in that community is to have that regular conversation and storytelling in various stages along the way and encouraging people to dream with success stories.
Yeah. But that's also who are making the decisions in that group of people. Those are the ones that are exactly what he's talking about. Who are you going to target?
Yeah.
We were training mothers in Vietnam, you know, to raise their kids. Well, it was the grandmothers who were telling the mothers what to do, so they had to go to the grandmother, right? So you have to find out who's making those final decisions and who's holding, who's stopping, but who's pushing.
Yeah.
And that's great what you're doing there for the bench, but also identifying who are the right people.
Yeah, and telling more stories. We need to get better at telling stories to get people to be creative and dream a little bit and think about potential and possibility.
Well,
somehow.
I want to share with you the stories that Leanne and also Meredy shared at today's county councilor meeting. And as a way to give them a better understanding as far as what the Disability Advisory Board is doing and a different perspective that I think it resonated. So Leanne, could you kind of share, because you were talking about housing.
Yes, I talked about the two housing groups, not realizing that
I didn't
home is under changes, but I talked about the studies that PEACE is doing, and so that was fabulous to hear about that this evening, and talked about the home group as well and talked about just, you know, needs in the community. And then we only had very short period of time to cover topics. 5 minutes on topic. Next, you know, so we, you know, these were really blurbs. And then I got a few minutes to talk to them about my son because I just wanted to leave them with the impression that you can't assume or presume what someone is capable of. You know, you need to give people opportunities. So I told them about that, and I told them about how my mind's blown that he has a driver's license and drives, and he has for, I figured out, 9 months he's been driving on his license. So, and a year before that on a permit. So, and I brought pictures of him, and I told them about high school sports. So, and prom. He's going to 2 proms this year. He went to his own with a date, and a gal from a different high school asked him, so he's got another one he's going to. And another tux rental. So it's really great. But I was going to say, if you could talk to Evergreen, because when he was little, I remember saying, well, they were like, what's after school? And I said, well, he's going to go to community college. This was when he was like in sixth grade. So every time they talked about transition, they'd be like, oh, community college. So, and nothing ever more was said. So, oh my God, he graduates next month. And I'm like in the throes of trying to deal with Clark College, trying to deal with Mount Hood Community College, seeing what they have, what classes do people who do students with high functioning autism, what do they take and what do they do well in?
Washington State, they have a
So that would be very helpful because at this time I'm like pulling my hair out and nobody can help me. Yeah, I need to, but I think the schools need to talk to parents about that. They just sort of wrote me off. When I said that, it was like, they never even gave me information about the transition program. I don't even know what it could have done for him. Because the tunnel vision became, oh, he's going to community college and you will deal with that. So I'm dealing with it all right, but I'm kind of freaking out. So I think they need to do a better job about that. Because it was just sort of they washed their hands of it when that was mentioned in like sixth grade. So.
And what was good about it, I think, because I was watching the counselors, is when you showed Jack's picture.
Oh, I brought big pictures.
And, you know, I mean, it's that combination of auditory and visual information so that they got a more holistic type of impression. And it actually contradicted a lot of assumptions. You know, that's the thing with a hidden disability is that, oh, okay. And then Meredith comes in and talks about this gentleman right here.
This shows how long I've been around. This is one of my former students. And, you know, apparently the county thought that people with intellectual disabilities shouldn't run.
There was a finance person at Public Works that thought that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities couldn't use tools. And it turns out he's been working for about 15 years for Public Works. And then I pulled that off their website. I didn't go out and take the picture. It was a Public Works picture.
It was fun. But truly, Leanne's was absolutely the creme de creme because there were pictures and the story is so powerful. But she needs to share that with families of young children to give vision and not necessarily and hope, but ideas about what can happen. Because it just, and it has to happen over and over again because there are people at different stages all along the way. But obviously, I mean, I had to say that transition's been my thing for 30 years. In 88, I went to Washington, or University of Washington, they had the first transition conference or thing about that. And I have been lit ever since because when talking to parents, it's like, what's next? Well, I wanted to say, can I get back to you on that? But now there is, and it's much more ingrained, and which is wonderful. But it's, I agree, it has to start young, and for the pieces that you can do for that, you know. So going out for basketball in junior high or whatever that is, making it natural. And then moving on, and so transition isn't as traumatic as it can be. But this gal needs to go in the room, let me tell you. She was fabulous.
We built it on first with Ronnie talking about
she was
the birth, the three group, and the whole need for early diagnosis, also a sense of dreaming, I think. Can you share just a couple things, Ronnie?
Early intervention is critical in the birth to two-year-old, three-year-old time. It's when the brain is growing. The brain cells are there, but they're not connected yet. So when that connection happens, that happens with stimulation, holding a baby, talking to a baby, feeding a baby. So children that don't get that kind of stimulation, that are neglected or all kinds of situations, aren't building those synapses in their brain, their brain cells, to help them learn and then hold on to that learning by continual support in whatever way. They need speech therapy, or, you know, just a small piece of the things that can happen and that kids might need. But critical from birth to two, around three or four, they start sloughing off the brain cells they're not using. So they're just like sponges, and we've heard that for years. They'll grow, grow, grow in their brain as long as you keep feeding them things to absorb. And early intervention is critical to help support the children and the teachers, the, you know, staff, and the parents.
Didn't you say they were growing 250,000 a minute?
Yes.
Every minute, 250,000 connections in your brain in those early years.
So that helped us. We started with Ronnie. We talked about transition. We talked about employment, and I can, you know, tell you that again. We challenged them to expand opportunities. I focused on employment, and I was trying to pat them on the back for their commitments, but I didn't leave them off the hook as far as future commitments. And they were very open to it. I felt really positive about that. And then Patrick did transportation. And what was good about that is that here's a consumer and his experiences and how important it is for him. And yesterday when I was talking to him about his presentation, he had glowing reports about Veronica Marty, our lead travel trainer, and how much it meant to him. And he didn't mention her name during the training, but he mentioned the travel training program. And I think that they got a sense of, if you can give some assistance to somebody, then they can be much more independent, to be able to live independently, work independently, and have a quality of life that is very rewarding. So that was, in a nutshell, our presentation to the county council.
Well, if they can be trained to ride the regular buses, they don't have to ride the C-Van.
Yep.
And you end up saving a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right. They also get to their jobs more on time.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
And easier.
But it actually helps the people who you're talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think most people here know my son David, and I think he's a pretty good example of a lot of what we're talking about. The story, though, comes to my mind from way, way back when I first started getting involved with this group. We had a meeting, and we were talking with, it was a public meeting, and there was a couple there that had a child who was getting, I think, perhaps to maybe had graduated, I'm not sure exactly the age. And they had moved from another city, another state, and they were bemoaning the fact that we didn't have any sheltered workshops here. And they were just, what is wrong with this place? And I did my best to try to inform them a little bit, but, you know, in a limited amount of time. And it just, it was saddening that they had not had anything along the way to help them realize that, hey, there's a whole lot better out there for your child, the children worship.
Any questions for any of the folks that were at the meeting today? Mary, did you have any final remarks?
Just that all of you that were there, thank you. You did a great job. They liked it, which is what we want. And all of the rest of you have had your opportunities, and we'll get some again. So
we'll show them the unseen tape.
Yeah, we did have one there. We mentioned it this time. Yeah. It was mentioned. So, yeah, that's a great.
Did you talk about, what did you talk about?
Yes, and housing. It was mentioned about ADUs and Young Things House came up, so. And several of the counselors knew about, you know.
They'd seen the video.
Knew about
it, One person we have to get more involved. I mean, I don't, what Jacqueline and Lynn Kunkel have done with this, how they are, you know, in Evergreen, too, actually. There's a, started because I was training all the aides. But if you go back and see the difference between the aides before Jacqueline and Lynn worked on this and what they're doing now, and the relationship between the aides and teachers, and all this stuff, and how aides are now empowering students rather than doing things for them. You know, there's been a lot of stuff, a lot of work like that. That's something that has to happen too. But Lynn is someone who really has to, she got a double promotion out of that.
Oh,
and
Jacqueline.
You've got a little award, you know. Lynn got a double. She doesn't have the papers. That's the problem. Lynn is, I think, someone who really has been advocating that at the district level. And that's someone we need to get a hold of and and kind of show. I mean, they have people from all kinds of school districts coming and seeing that. And then what happens? They see it. And who follows up? And I think Lynn is someone who can do that at a much bigger level than Jacqueline. I mean, that's a good example of something that works, but you have to have someone with some oomph, I mean, with some talk, we say, that some power to do things on a bigger scale. So Lynn Kunkel.
Well, Trish, can you please give us some information about the autism project?
I'd love to.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is an upcoming project that we're going to be working on, and just wanted to share a little bit of information about what we're going to be doing. So every year or so, I send out a training survey to our employment agencies and ask them, you know, are there things that you'd like to learn about? And autism pretty regularly has come as the number one or near the top of a topic that our agencies want to learn more about and how to better support people. So now we are in the process of contracting. We're in negotiations with a national consultant. His name is James Emmett. He's from Indiana, and his background is in working with people with autism and specifically working with corporate job development. He was involved in some of the Walgreens things that you may have heard about, as well as other kind of corporations that you would recognize if I could remember their names right now. So what we're going to do with James is have him be kind of a part of a larger project that we're going to be doing here in Clark County. And it'll be over the course of the next year or so, starting after July 1. We'll have him come four times to do one day of training and one day of some technical assistance or other consultation for us. And he'll be talking about a variety of topics related to employment and people with autism during those visits. And then we will also be working with Meyer. We'll have a role in this project. To help with implementation in between the visits. So we're going to have James come about once every quarter and have Monica be a part of that as well. So the objectives of the project is to increase the number of people with autism in Clark County who are employed, making minimum wage or better, to increase the competency and competence of employment agencies to work with people with autism, and to provide better services based on promising practices in the field of autism and employment. And so the next steps is that we're going to be working to recruit our employment agencies to participate in this project. And identifying the training participants who will be attending the trainings with James. We're also going to identify, work with our agencies and families and individuals that we support to identify people who might want to be kind of a focus person as part of this project. So, or focus people. So that each of the staff members that work for the agencies will have somebody in mind that they are working with, that then they will be able to implement the things that they're learning with the people that they're supporting. So that's a little bit about our upcoming autism project. I'm pretty excited about it. I know that this is a need in our community. So, you know, it's a first go at it. We have talked with James about the option of extending his contract. Just based on how this first year goes, we may have a longer relationship with him.
What's his last name again?
James Emmett? E-M-M-E-T-T.
Yeah, we have to see how he does in our community before we commit to. This is like a date, not an engagement.
So, right,
not just a
coffee. Right. And we'll see. And so we're kind of hedging our bets, having Monica involved, so that eventually that's building our own community capacity. Locally, so we have, I mean, we already have some, but
so when you talk about wanting like participants or focused people, you're talking about people that are like 20, 21, getting ready to age out, that are or going to be in the process of working with employment, or people that are
These are people who are already in services, or you know, they could be starting right now, if that would be fine as well. But it's people that would be already in service or coming into service. So the project will be starting after July 1 sometime. We don't, we're still nailing down the exact date.
He had a good reason.
Yeah, he's donated a kidney. So we're in the process of doing this. He's like, well, we'll be out the next couple weeks. So, well, he's donating it to his wife. So I'm sure he's, you know, going for husband of the year. any other questions?
If he's here and it's a board meeting, we might bring him up.
Yeah.
And let him talk to you if it ever works out that way.
The next item on it is on the agenda is transit update. The big thing at C-Tran right now is the development of the Middle Plain bus rapid transit that will go up and down the Middle Plain. If you haven't ridden the Vine, you'll get a sense of what it would be like on Middle Plain. Much faster, a little bit sleeker. One of the things that people seem to like about the Vine is the off-vehicle fare payment. You know, you're not hung up waiting for somebody in front of you that has, you know, a whole bunch of dimes that they're putting in there and stuff like that. And also the ease of boarding. I think it's going to take a few years to get it completed because of some structural things that need to be done. Right now, we're in the process of starting the environmental reviews and those kinds of things. But Sean Donaghy, our executive director, is the type of person that says, okay, we'll have it ready by November. And so everybody else is going, huh? But it's a new, interesting dynamic. But CDAN services, like you were saying, is very expensive, and so we're putting a lot of energy and effort into our travel training program so that people could have that as an alternative. I do recommend that anybody that has issues with C-TRAN or C-VAN services is to let us know. And I mean that sincerely, that we won't know that something needs to be fixed if you say, well, I don't want to rock the boat, or I don't want to draw any attention, those kinds of things. And so today's memory exercise, and I have to do these daily, is call 695-360-695-0123. Again, 695-0123.
Especially if I call the next 10 minutes.
Yes. And that's
7 days.
We never sleep. But that's the customer service phone number. If you know anybody that needs some travel training, let us know. We're right now starting, and we're doing a pretty aggressive program with the Evergreen School District Transition Program. And GATE has been a program we've worked extensively with as well. As a matter of fact, a number of the Evergreen Transition students are now using fixed route rather than C-band to go to their employment sites, which is nice. And it gives them a taste and confidence building. So that's what's going on with transit. I do have something else I'd like to add to the agenda, which is an understanding as far as from the board members of what types of direction or what types of efforts should we be starting to look at from our point of views.
C-TRAN?
No, not C-TRAN.
The board.
DD advisory. You know, one of the things we heard today was about dreaming, taking an attitude of instilling optimism and confidence in the parents or the care providers of a young person with an intellectual disability. What types of things, other than the annual October event, do we want to give further study and guidance on, so that we can help staff and support their efforts, and more importantly, support the efforts of the families?
I would like that. I would like to change culture.
I would think, you know, working with schools is important, that we can get, because, you know, like, we came here, my son, he was, you know, the only one, but he did everything overseas. He came here, and he got to a place that they wouldn't even let him eat in the cafeteria with other kids.
What?
And so, in Evergreen, you can't eat, they don't, the special needs kids don't, the kids with special needs can't eat in the regular cafeterias.
Is that true in all of the Evergreen schools?
It may depend upon the program.
This is before he got involved, right? And they still have this, and they have the other ones, the pull-ups, right? Which are needed, maybe, but you know, but none of those, when he was there, he says, well, this is the perfect place to get him to understand how to work in the cab. Well, no, right. Because there's too many other kids, and they'll all be run over or something like that. And so
this
is,
so. So
these are things I think, you know, I mean, the smaller schools as well, but how do you get to parents? It's, well, you guys know better than me, but I think I've always been in education, so you do it in the schools. But if there's something, you know, even if you get, for example, do a video of you on fire, you know. But better, I mean, on fire is, you know.
Maybe we need a podcast. Maybe we need one of those, like, YouTube videos, because a lot of the... it's always the same of us that come out. The whole way through this journey, it's always been the same of us, you know, Mona and I years ago, and Monica, and I know Chris too. I did talk about the inclusion steering committee today, Chris. So it's largely the same group. And when you need to change culture and ways of thinking, you've got to get to parents of younger kids, mm-hmm. and start there. And it's going to be those same parents that come out to seek information. So when there were support groups, whether it was from through ECC or VEC, and I don't even know what exists now, but
you know, it was always the same people coming, and it wasn't those people necessarily that needed some of the exposure. It was those that were coming. How do you overturn the rocks and get to people? But in those early years, you're maxed and taxed as a parent too. You're stretched real thin, needs are high, and it gets easier. It does. It gets easier in time. And how much time just depends upon the individual and the family. It gets different. Mm-hmm. It does. That's true. Yeah, that's, I have just as many gray hairs, maybe as little, but they're different kinds of gray caused by different things. But
driving.
So yeah, not even driving. Driving's easy. So how do we get to those young parents? And I'm thinking maybe a YouTube, maybe a series of videos they can watch with local veteran parents or parents at different ages along the way that they could access on their time.
Yeah.
Well, I think two things. I think that the Informing Families Building Trust website is full and replete with video and training and information, and we just need to keep helping parents find that, because once they're there, they can access and sign up for alerts for new materials, and it's got a tremendous amount of information. And yeah, you're maxed in tasks, and at certain points you're going to hear some stuff and you're going to say, that's enough for now. But that doesn't mean we don't keep saying all those things over and over again, and the message is the same. I think we tend to think we have to tell parents of 2 and 3 year olds, you have to think about what they're going to do when they're grown ups. No, what we really need to do is say, let's think about next year and how to stretch your kiddo next year, and then the next year, or this arena of his life, or that area of her life, regularly, so that they get in the habit of dreaming and thinking outside the DD bubble and the service delivery system, yeah, and begin to think about what are community assets. So I'd be real curious and interested in having some community activator event with Bruce Anderson or some of those guys, MCD guys, coming to town and doing a community activator kind of event.
Oh, for the whole community. We can do that.
Well, it doesn't have to be him. There's negative history, but yeah.
No,
it's not that community activating stuff, so that the whole community is thinking in that way,
and
more inclusive, more diverse, right?
Also, people know about some of these other things that are already there. We keep on reinventing the wheel sometimes, and sometimes there's just solid.
We just need communication, and storytelling. Yeah. One of the things that went away, and is that I was just going to mention this just before you started talking about that, but the special ed PTSA that was created however many years ago is now ending. So that their last meeting will be actually this weekend, and that's something that Pam Otten started, I don't know how many years ago. I was involved for a long time. Leanne was as well. Brandy Diamond's been carrying the torch for quite a while, and a few years ago they moved it from really being a separate PTA into empowering those parents to move back into their school PTSAs and be part of the school PTA in their school building where their child is attending. And that was a great move forward. And because there are so many other groups now and other special interest groups and support groups and so on, the attendance for a special ed PTSA has dropped to very, very minimal. And so they said, you know, maybe it's the season. Maybe it's a time for it to be done. So it's going to end this weekend. That used to be a conduit for us to new and young parents. So now that's going away. So now I don't know how to access those new parents. But we need to think about that, because that information, while there weren't parents to lead it and be coming to meetings regularly, they have a huge contact list of parents.
Yeah.
And there was a great development of special ed teachers telling parents about the special ed PTSA, which was an information flow conduit both directions to those new parents. So somehow, that's going away. So somehow that needs to, we need to maintain those connections and that connecting of new parents and accessing those younger parents in that way. So two pronged, I guess, two different pieces of info there.
Child care.
Yeah, food and child care are critical pieces.
I just want to add on to what Mona was saying. One of the things that I know that, and this has been some years ago now, but when my son was in group 3 and then probably 3 to 5 is is the Pride program that was originally at Clark College, and it was a cooperative preschool. And we had, as part of our participation for our son and daughter to be at this preschool, we had to go through certain levels of learning. And that, for me, that is what really catapulted me into the work that I do right now, is because it was like, of course your son or daughter can do this. Of course you can move forward. And this is how you can play and interact with other children. It was not only working with the child with a disability, but working with the parent, and then getting that training that we received that, I mean, to this day, I think it's been something that that was the seed that really started my journey and the work that I do today. And I think it should start with the three. And that's where we need to give people a lot of parents hope, because that is during that grief process they need. And regardless of what people say, there is a grief process, because there's an ending, there's a change in what your expectations are. So we have to give them hope and make them give them opportunities to dream. And then secondly, this is actually back to you, Walt, and that was on your transit up date regarding the travel training, the additional travel training. Is there a possibility of having assistive technology?
Say again, please.
Assistive technology.
As a matter of fact, we're in the process of developing an RFP for what is called wayfinding, which is using real-time transit information. It's called GTFS, which is the raw data from the automatic vehicle locating system, and pushing that out so that a person could then take that in the form of an app on their phone,
yes,
and we get real-time information. But more importantly, there's different features that we're advocating that we have on this, and one of those is to inform the consumer that has it, either by text or auditory cue, it's time to pull the ripcord for that stop. You put in the travel plan, and as you're traveling, you get a vibration on your phone that says, okay, your stop's coming up, pull the ripcord. And there's a number of different programs like that, applications, yes, like that. Transit Tracker is what TriMet has. One Bus Away is what's up in the Puget Sound area. And there's one called Move It. Okay. I'm thinking immediately of that cartoon, you know, you gotta move it, move it, move it, you know.
I don't know that one.
You know, it's with the
Madagascar.
Yeah, Madagascar, thank you. Okay. I see a lot of those because our 6-year old grandson.
See, I haven't spent enough time in those classrooms.
Mm-hmm. But that's what we're right now developing, is a scope of work, and then comparing it with how much money we have available for something like that. But that's an important piece,
yes,
that is, it's one of those perfect universal designs, because if I want to use it, I can use it. It's going to tell me if there's a detour, it's going to tell me how late my bus is, and if a person with a disability, let's say a sight disability, can't see out for visual cues, it's going to alert them for the next stop that they want. So, yeah, and what we hope is, like what TriMet has done, is that once this information, the GTFS, Google Transit feed, something or other, is available, then we're going to do like TriMet does, is have these Appaloosas, which is inviting app designers to come in and create their own version. And there's like 30 different applications or apps that developers have created for just specifically TriMet. There's one that's TriMet Rail app, TriMet Bus app, you know, all those kinds of things. So that's what we're hoping to do. Yeah.
So that's awesome. Because I one of the things that I've done for several people with autism, it also works for people with brain injury, memory, mm-hmm, issues, mental health issues is a curriculum that I follow, which is called Power Cards. It's the what if. What if this happens? You have to step by step, this is what I can do for myself.
Yep.
So it gives the autonomy to somebody and independence rather than, oh, I have to have somebody that they can access that on their phone or whatever, and then have the opportunity to be able to teach that person how to use that and then facilitate
it. Of course, you have to be able to use the phone, but this technology is just going to get bigger and bigger and better and better. And you know, it's fantastic. It's, I'm glad you're using it then, because.
Well, we hope to be. I mean, I've been trying to get wayfinding technology now for 3 years, and I have money through the 5310 program to throw into the game. But other things had to happen first, and we actually are addressing that with some new technologies.
And I think we move it. I think if you're getting people, you know what, you know.
Yeah.
Well, soon they're going to have something where I can zap you and get you control.
Yeah.
It's scary, but maybe useful.
I think with technology is at a point where I have to stop thinking about writing things down, and because it's especially the younger people, it's so using that on websites for young parents or any parent, to they can do it at their own time and see it and repeat it, rather than having, I mean, it's great to get together for the support, but sometimes what you want to see is what choices do I have and how can I maybe prevent this or change it, and it could be right there on the computer or you know, tablet or something.
I'm going to send you all an article that was in Governing magazine today about loneliness, if you remember.
The Cigna study. That's what I was pulling up on my phone when I backed it up.
You know, David Kotoniak has talked about this for years, but it's also relevant for people without disabilities because people aren't turning out for a lot of things. They're not joining Kiwanis, they're not going to church, they're not going to Rotary, they're not going to PTA, they're getting more and more isolated, and maybe that has an effect. We have a much higher suicide rate than we used to have. So I think when you're thinking about all of this, the dreaming and getting people connected, you're actually talking about building community too, and it's something that will make you healthier.
I wanted to say that in the Board of County Councilors meeting today, I had my phone out and I had the line from that study that like really left me going, what? Loneliness actually has the same effect on mortality as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's like, wow. And Cigna is studying it because they say it's making us sick. And they want to enter, you know, loneliness prevention or addressing loneliness in their medical model. So
we're going to hear a lot more about this because the medical community is going to pick up, the insurance companies are going to pick up on
They're
it.
They're picking up on it.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the things that we were just talking about earlier. The elected community are asset mapping for a person. Like, for instance, I'll give a for instance for my son, Michael. We go to Catholic Church. For him to attend a Catholic Mass is very difficult. So I have asked, I mean, what Michael can do is, I mean, to, you know, the rule, not the rules, but, you know, kind of like, you join a parish, you're part of a parish, you go to Mass. Michael can't attend. It doesn't have a meaning to him. But what he can do is everything else around the church before and after. I mean, somebody would, you know, an usher would do or whatever. But it's find a way, how can I be part of this? Rather than, I want to join, I don't know how, it's just like the moment. What are the steps? How do I, it's almost like you need, you know, a task analysis to go through and say, well, how about this? And I talked to our priest and he was like, oh, that would be fabulous. That would be awesome.
Be a part of something.
Be a part of something. Because one of the other things that he loves to do is, like, I think it's every third Sunday, it's quarterly, but they have a potluck for all of the parishioners. Michael loves it. I'm like, you won't go to Mass, but he will sit there and read this thing and he just, and he wants to do whatever he can to help. Yeah, he lets people watch. And they get a microphone.
There you go.
But you know, that is that, you know, thinking and dreaming and looking at it differently. Yeah. If I want to belong, it might look different than I go through here.
We are a body, and the body has many parts.
Any other suggestions, ideas, concerns that the board would like to share?
I just wanted to mention, are you asking for like anything before we close?
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention, and I'm sure many people got the email about Nitha LaFever passing away, and that her service is this Saturday. She's a long time, as most people know, advocate in the autism community, and she's a speech.
She was autism before autism.
Yeah, she was.
You know, she really was a strong advocate.
Thank you. Anything else?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it is wonderful to help people build community. I've been doing some research with my students on the pros and cons of social media and how it affects people's mental health. And there's a fine line there between, you know, oh, this can be great and good, this can be you too, because it can kind of backfire on you as well. And so we don't want to present something that's like, you know, your life will be great like mine is too. And it's just like, so oh, I'm never going to get there, so why even try? I just don't want to, we just have to be cognizant of that, you know, too much. This can be great if you go about it the right way. It can also be hard to swallow. That's what I've been researching. My job. With my kids.
Well, people don't largely put their struggles on social media.
Yeah.
So it looks so great, but then there are struggles.
Yeah.
Like, I can sit and talk about all the great things that my son has done, but that isn't like all the hard times we have. We have hard times,
yeah.
Really hard times, and bad times too. So it doesn't talk about those necessarily. And that's like a double-edged sword. Because especially for autism, sometimes it's the in-person contact, this kind of conversation that's really hard, but the processing delay and the disconnect and the distance of being able to type stuff in on a phone, on an app, at home, in your room, and converse with, you know, the world or a lot of individuals through messaging, that's a connector.
Yeah.
That's a big connector, so it's hard.
Yeah. Well, and I find that, you know, I had a meeting with a parent today, but you know, it's like I've taught middle school for a long time, that they just get this thing like, God, my child is the only one that's like this, so it becomes their personal struggle, instead of, you know, like other middle school teachers with teenagers would be at the meeting saying, you know, no, my son's the same way. He just need to talk to more parents with teenagers, but everybody's too embarrassed to talk about it because they feel like their child is the only one. And so helping people, you know, kind of bridge that and be able to share.
The stigma is there.
Yeah. Well, that's like you're talking about PPF, the Special Ed Parents Teacher Association, that back in, like when I first started teaching a parent, she's like, I said, you should just try the PTA. She's like, oh no, my son is such a problem in the school. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. And that was a BS, you know? And it's like, no, you need to, yeah.
And in those early years too, like going to some of those things, even the open houses were triggers.
Yeah.
Were triggers for grief.
Yeah.
When all the other kids were all over and it was just so, and your child's struggling or doesn't understand or, you know, I hated open houses for a long time. They were big grief triggers. And to go to those PTA chat meetings, if they were arguing, you know, I'm in East County, so I was out in Fisher's Landing and Chehalis and Union, and they would be like, well, the curriculum isn't hard enough, and da 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 da. And I'm thinking, my concerns are very different. And I don't know, so I'm encouraged that they're going to those just to create some awareness, and maybe if they're in groups, that'll be better. Because I felt alone, really, at those events, and it was discouraging.
Even though the inclusion piece is great, even in that type of thing, there still has to be places where people can feel safe.
And,
Anyone else?
So just a final thought. I know you're a success story. So one of my kiddos on the autism spectrum auditioned for and got a part of the cast of our middle school did Shrek Junior. They performed it Friday night, Saturday matinee, and Saturday night. So they've been rehearsing for 3 years. And he's Puss in Boots.
Puss in Boots.
So he had a non-speaking role, but he has the swagger. And so the one thing that really is horrifying for this young man is fire drill. So it's even an accommodation. We're having a drill, and it's expected that we are doing it for him. And he has the earmuffs on standby, and he knows that life will go on. And so I did the Friday night show. It's coming down to the end. The wedding with the prince has been disrupted, and Fiona is off stage, and the whole cast is out there, including Puss in Boots. And we're sitting in the Camas High School auditorium, and you hear this beep, 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 and the strobe lights are going, and the fire alarm goes off. And we're all sitting there like, it's part of the show? Like, I don't remember this from the movie. And Mr. Hagen gets on the speaker and says, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a joke. We need to evacuate the premises now. And my whole way out, I'm like stuck in this horde of people, and my student's mom is there too, somewhere. And I'm just like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. So I finally find her, we get outside, and I said, how is he? And she's like, he's fine, look at him over there, he's in heaven. Fire girl didn't face him, he had his costume on, and he was a whole different person. So it was a wonderful show. So, and I'm happy now.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
That's a move.
Second. Third. All in favor, say it. Out of here.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you.